Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing with Jennifer and Kim. Our guest today is Naomi Teitelman.
Naomi Teitelman is the founder of Collaborativity, a Toronto-based consultancy focused on driving progressive talent strategy in this new world of work. Naomi is also co-founder of Future Forward, whose mission is to empower human resources and all leaders for the future to make work better through their weekly newsletter, podcast, and private community for senior HR leaders.
Prior to entrepreneurship, Naomi held multiple HR roles at American Express, including the role of VP and Chief Human Resources Officer of Amex Canada. Naomi holds an MBA from Columbia Business School and a Bachelor of Commerce degree from McGill University. We're so excited to have Naomi with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Naomi, let's dive right in. Why are you so passionate about hybrid working?
Well, you know, I started working back in the day. I won't say the exact year, but let's just say technology was not what we have at our disposal today. And so, you know, back then, we actually were required to be in the office for some tasks, such as ticking and tying work papers, for example. We had binders and red colored pencils. You can imagine what the timing was. But we always worked actually in a hybrid environment. So I started my career at Deloitte. So, you know, on days where we were not with the client, we were either at home or in the office if we wanted to congregate. But I've been in the workforce for many, many years, and I've only ever worked in what we now call a hybrid working model. So I'm a firm believer that there are some activities, there are some tasks, there are some things day to day that are better suited in the office and others that are better suited what we're now calling remote or distributed. And so now, you know, jump forward X number of years, I won't say how many, but you can look at my LinkedIn profile and figure it out. We have so many options at our disposal to get work done so productively in this way that if we were able to do it back then when I was ticking and tying work papers, we can do it now. And, you know, all this rhetoric about productivity and innovation and creativity being stifled by being, you know, in a hybrid model is just not accurate. And so I think it's really important to look at the data and to really understand the story of hybrid working. We've had it for many, many years. It was called teleworking at one point. It was called telecommuting at one point. But we've been in this type of model in a lot of organizations for many years, though up until the pandemic, it was really focused on either real estate slash cost cutting slash footprint reduction strategies and in agency type work where you weren't with the same team every day or every week like I was at Deloitte. But I've been in a hybrid model for my entire career, and I've managed to be productive for my entire career. So I feel very strongly about the beauty of hybrid model when you use it as a strategy to enable people to get their work done best.
So Naomi, I have a question because you raised a couple of points, which is, first of all, hybrid's not new. Mm-hmm. And it's been around for many, many years, and we called it different things.
Yep.
So why is it such a topic of conversation, and why is it that CEOs are so passionate about either being in the office or not being in the office? Because really, very little has changed based on the way that you've described it, which I agree with you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, before the pandemic, there were lots of companies who were implementing slash in a in a business as usual state in their hybrid working journey, right? So like I said, you know, I started out at Deloitte. I was at American Express for 7 years. We implemented a hybrid working model in 2010 at American Express and had spoken to lots of companies who were implementing some form of flexibility in their working model. The pandemic was the great equalizer, and it was a big experiment in this notion of remote working, right? So the difference was that we did, in many cases, we didn't have a choice but to work remotely. And then we discovered, actually, we can work fully remotely in a lot of our roles, quite productively, if not more productively. But the aspect of belonging, the aspect of kind of building relationships was what was, you know, what felt like it was suffering a little bit. So, you know, now we're at a juncture where this is a big change at scale, right? Like this is a big global change at scale. And to your point, you know, why are we so, you know, committed to saying, you know, it's the right thing or it's the wrong thing versus like, let's focus on outcomes and get our work done and not really care where people are, because let's all remind ourselves that we have global teams in most companies. So most companies will never have their entire team together for any body of work. So I think we're focused on the wrong things. I think it's, you know, there are a few things at play. There's real estate and sunk cost fallacy going on, right? Companies that have invested a lot of money in real estate and think that if we utilize it 5 days a week, that's a really good thing. And that's a metric that we really care about. The other thing is control, right? And how I grew up, everyone had to be in the office or you could not learn. You could not be apprenticed. You could not be mentored. And I really want to draw the difference between fully remote and hybrid, right? So hybrid implies that most people are in the office at some sort of cadence on a regular basis, right? There have always been exceptions. We've always had people who, you know, move away and you decide that they are a very top talent in a critical role and we need to make it work from wherever they are. But on average, most people are expected to be in the office at X cadence, right? And X cadence has a lot of discussion around it too. So I guess my main point is that this is new at scale, at the magnitude that we're talking about it. And so that's why I think it's gotten a lot of backs up against the wall saying, whoa, are we letting employees kind of take over too much? Are we kind of caving to their needs and not focusing on the needs of the business? When, you know, we're seeing a lot of data and increasing bodies of evidence that say, in fact, hybrid working is a win-win, right? Like you increase productivity, you increase innovation, you increase creativity, you increase collaboration because of the technology tools that we have at our disposal.
Yeah, I mean, my question really is about the body of evidence. Because Naomi, I'm going to be honest with you, I've seen both sides.
Yeah.
How do we know what to believe?
Yeah, so there's, you know, there is confirmation bias for sure. You know, if you believe one way versus the other, you're going to, you know, see your feed, cater more to that side, etc. But if we think about like even Amazon, right? If you think about the personas and the teams that they have in their org, let's just use common sense, right? Like let's not look at the bodies of evidence right now. Let's use common sense, right? Amazon has lots of roles that are fully in the field. They have lots of roles that are, you know, corporate roles. They have lots of roles that are technology development roles, right? And so let's take the technology developer roles. All of a sudden, people want to know where the technology developers are. Like before the pandemic, we didn't care where they were. They were all over the world, quite frankly, and they rarely showed up in the office. And quite frankly, like when they do collaborate, they're collaborating online, right? They're collaborating over their code. They don't need to be side by side all the time. And some ever, right? So if you think about forcing people back to the office 5 days a week, right? That is actually going to reduce the productivity in many roles where, you know, there's distraction, there's the commute, there's all these things that come into play that the cost benefit of having those roles in the office all the time is not quite there, right? And so in terms of the evidence, I choose to follow Rob Sato at Flex Index because he has actually, since the pandemic, knocked on people's doors and asked, what's the policy? What do people want in your organization? And what does badge swipe data look like, right? Like he actually aggregates those data points and produces a quarterly report. And so, you know, yes, I mean, it is like the companies that are in his data set, but it's pretty good data. And then Nick Bloom has been studying work from home literally for 20 years. And so, you know, he's had his moment now. He finally now, you know, people are really caring about this stuff. And he has some really excellent data. He's very careful about the data sets he uses and the methodology he uses. He's a Stanford professor. So we have to be careful about some of the reports coming out of biased companies that obviously, you know, are either in real estate or do consulting around real estate or whatever the case is for shock value, that we don't take headlines as data and we really check ourselves. And I think this is a trend, you know, in the world we live in right now, in our transparent world of misinformation and disinformation, is really trying to get to real unbiased. I mean, it's always going to have some sort of bias in it, but some form of unbiased data that's coming from the experts. I think that's really important.
And, In order for our listeners to learn more, we're going to be sharing the links to some of those folks that you've just mentioned so that they can do some more research on the bodies of work that you have just referenced.
Yeah. Another one is Brian Elliott does a ton of work on this, and Mark Ma out of University of Pittsburgh does a lot of work on this and the implications of hybrid working, kind of that question around loneliness and mental well-being. There was a great article that Dr. Gleb Sapirsky put out that shared some of his evidence. So really getting to the closest to unbiased evidence as possible is really important, I think. And I will note that data is really important. It's important not to think that everybody is going back to the office full time just because Amazon announced it, or just because 83% of CEOs believe that hybrid is going to be done in 3 years. That's not comprehensive data. So, you know, there are people commenting about it, there are opinions about it, but, you know, it's really important. I think Nick Bloom and Rob Sadow's data are very sound.
I think that's great because we do continue to see these headlines and they have a lot of sizzle. And then there seems to be like a general Amazon's 5 days now, this is it, this is the end. And people kind of get in a little bit of a panic. It is really going to be useful for people to look up those additional resources where there might be some other perspectives on what's actually happening in the market en masse. Because when someone like, or a company like Amazon does something like that, you definitely hear about it. It ripples throughout and everyone starts to rethink their original strategy, which I think is unfortunate because not every company is Amazon, nor do they have the same roles or the same needs or, you know, to your point about real estate and other considerations like that. So on top of the things that we've all just covered, what are some additional sort of hidden benefits to hybrid work that you've seen, Naomi?
Yeah, so there are several. So first, the no-brainer is diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? There was a study put out that companies with flexibility, people with disabilities have no impact on whether they can be in the workforce or not, versus companies that don't offer any flexibility. You see the graph kind of completely go downhill from no disability down to, you know, severe disability, right? So that's a no-brainer. And that's obviously intuitive, but something that we don't think about when we think of our hybrid strategy, not policy, by the way. The other obvious one is women staying in the workforce longer, right? And it's very easy to say, everyone go back to the office, you shouldn't be walking your dog during the day. But reality is putting a load of laundry in the washing machine takes a total of 2 seconds. And to do that, you know, in between meetings, instead of waiting until after your hour and a half commute home, is very beneficial for people, right? And if you think of the cost benefit of that person, not to say that women and moms are the only ones doing laundry, because everyone should be participating in laundry, but a lot of the household role still often falls on the women. Putting something quickly into the oven while you're on your 5 o'clock meeting is much easier than waiting for the end of your hour and a half commute, right? So there's the women's participation in the work force obviously can go up as well. And then the microaggressions that are avoided by working remotely have been reported as another key benefit. So again, I'm not saying that most companies would do amazing fully remote. I actually am a firm believer in balance in everything. And so I think a hybrid approach provides that perfect balance that you can get win-wins everywhere, right? Like you eventually get into a rhythm with your team that you're planning your weeks around what the week looks like and you manage accordingly. And some weeks you may have to be in the office 5 days a week. Others you may not be in the office at all. But I'm going off on a tangent and I'm coming back to the other benefits. So innovation, productivity, and well-being are three kind of interesting ones that there's a lot of rhetoric that those things are negatively impacted by hybrid working. Again, we're talking hybrid working. We're not talking fully remote. I had an interesting conversation with Dr. Gleb Sapirsky on my podcast about innovation is not this like amorphous thing, right? Like there is a very deliberate step-by-step process to innovation. And there are some steps in the process that are way better suited to asynchronous and digital work than being in person and together, right? It mitigates things like groupthink. It mitigates things like introverts or people who aren't as self-confident coming forward and sharing ideas. So as long as you manage the steps deliberately, innovation actually is better in a hybrid model than it is in a fully remote or fully in person. Productivity is the other big loaded one, right? Just because you're in front of me doesn't mean that you're doing work. And I always say, if someone's scrolling on Netflix or shopping, I'd rather them do that at home so that they're not, you know, impacting other people's engagement. And then well-being is the other one that people like to say, oh, you know, there's more loneliness. And the difference from the pandemic, where there was a lot of loneliness to do with isolation, was that we had no choice. We couldn't see anybody ever. So, you know, that obviously loneliness went up exponentially. But now that we have choice, you know, I say, like, I work fully remotely and I always know when I'm going to feel lonely. So I schedule coffees in advance to be in person with someone because I know, okay, at like the week mark, I'm going to want to see someone in person. So, you know, I think we need to start treating each other like adults and have those hard discussions and the easier discussions. And then the other ones that are coming out as early data out of Rob Sadow's Flex Index research are employee sentiment and headcount growth seem to have a positive correlation with companies with flexibility, as well as, this is going to be a controversial one, but as well as revenue growth. So we'll see how those things pan out. Again, these are early days of gathering those data points. There is, interestingly, a tipping point in size of organization where their employee sentiment is higher for fully remote or employee choice, which is fully flexible, versus structured hybrid. So it makes sense that as your company gets bigger and the systems become more complex, the teams become more complex and cross-functional, employee sentiment goes up in the hybrid working space versus a fully remote or fully employee choice.
Naomi, what I've also seen, and I've actually studied it myself in a number of organizations, is that more junior employees tend to fare better when they have at least some level of in-person, particularly if they're working close to, not even necessarily physically side by side, but close to their manager.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about how the whole idea of hybrid as a strategy and how it could really effectively be leveraged for all of the benefits that you spoke about, but also ensuring that newer employees or people who are learning in their jobs or growing their careers are also getting the type of in-person that they need in order to be as productive as they possibly can be and to, you know, bring their best performance.
Yeah, for sure. So let's take a step back and just define kind of what the outcome is when you have a hybrid policy versus a hybrid strategy. So if you have a hybrid policy, you get maybe compliance as the outcome, although we're seeing a lot of, like, then under the radar leaders saying, no, you don't really need to come to the office, even though, you know, so compliance is the ultimate outcome that you're striving for. You're looking at badge swipe data and whether someone is or is not in the office check. If you look at it as a strategy, hybrid working is part of a broader flexibility philosophy, which then is part of the employee experience, which then leads to productivity and performance, right? If you make the employee experience better, you're going to have more engaged employees. They're going to want to perform. They're going to be more productive, right? So we want employee experience as the outcome, not compliance. And then if you think about it, you know, there's different strategic methods you can use to really adequately define the problem that you're trying to solve. You're not trying to solve how many days a week in the office people are. Right? Like, that's not the problem we're trying to solve. We're trying to solve the problem. This is, you know, just one suggestion of how do we optimize the balance between belonging. So if I'm in the office all the time interacting with my people, belonging is going to go up, versus flexibility, which is then I have no flexibility. But if I'm fully remote, I have optimal flexibility, but the belonging maybe takes a bit of a hit, right? So then we think about tactically, how do I bring that to life in the best way? And you'll see that, like, the 2 or 3 days per week in the office is in the policy bucket. So I say people, process and policy, and technology. So to answer your question, Kim, around, you're basically asking a question around a specific persona that exists within a team, right? So then I have my team, I look at the personas within my team, and I want to optimize that problem statement that I've just said. I'm not just going to leverage how many days per week those people are in the office. I'm going to leverage the people aspect, which is, what's my leadership development strategy? What's my people development strategy? What types of locations am I open to? What kind of talent pool do I want, a bigger one or a smaller one? I'm going to look at process and ways of working and policy, and I'm going to look at the enabling technologies, right? And enabling space as well, I would put in that bucket, the infrastructure, right? So if I'm bringing people to the office, what does my space look like? And is it actually conducive to all of these benefits that we think we have when we're in the office, right? I've been in many situations where you go into the the office, you can't find a desk, and you're squatting in your car for a private meeting, right? So to answer your question specifically about more junior employees, definitely building relationships in general is better suited in person. Yes, you can do it remotely. Yes, you can do it with collaboration tools. We did it during the pandemic. We're human beings. We're social beings. Those types of deep relationships and connections are better suited in person. And yes, when you're in the office and everyone else is in the office too, you see things that you don't see when you're sitting by yourself at your desk at home. Nobody can argue that. But does that have to happen 5 days a week, right? Thinking of yourself as a senior leader, if everyone's in the office 5 days a week, how much time are you really spending with each person on your team? So how can we better deliberately manage what's done in the office versus what's done remotely? Because even the very most junior members of your team, given the technology we have at our disposal, we can probably carve out like a day at least for them to be doing deep work at home at their desk and typing messages to people on Slack if they have questions, right? So yes, for sure, relationship building, apprenticeship, mentorship is way better suited in person. But how do we measure that as an outcome? Nick Bloom actually brought up an amazing point, which I don't know why this resonated with me so much. If you have your management or your leadership development and evaluation process nailed, you don't even have to talk about remote or in person, because naturally you will see that better managers and better leaders have some form of interaction with their people on a regular basis. And because relationships are better built in person, you will naturally have people in the office with you on a regular basis. So it's less about 2 days a week in the office, compliance check. And by the way, like either HR or facilities has to manage that process. Who wants to do that? And more focused on the outcomes of great leaders and great managers.
So Naomi, one of the things that I find is overlooked during a lot of these considerations with companies trying to decide on either their policy or their strategy is the stress level associated with commuting 2.5 hours a day, not being able to put your laundry in the 5 minutes in between meetings. So just personally speaking, I left the Toronto market working downtown 12 years ago because I was commuting 2.5 hours a day. If I had known that my role would at some point go hybrid, which wasn't even, you know, a glint in anyone's eye back then, I would still be living in Long Branch in my lovely house, you know, enjoying my role with that company where I assume I was at least somewhat valuable. And instead, you know, I had to leave the market because I just couldn't cope with the amount of pressure. Bearing in mind, I had zero children. I just had a dog, a 2.5 hour commute, and, you know, had to deal with transit on a daily basis. So why do you think companies have such a difficult time understanding that aspect of hybrid work? Or do they just not want people to have it? Like, what is the disconnect there between companies trying to decide on their strategy and recognizing how it impacts happiness?
Really important for us to talk about it, that, you know, it's one thing for executives to say, I don't mind paying for parking every single day. And let's be honest, many executives get their parking paid for. It's the more junior employees who might have left the city during the pandemic. And I don't know if either of you have driven in a major metropolitan city these days. It's a disaster. So certainly not fun. But for more junior employees, it's not only about the time, it's also about the cost. And I think we need to address that.
Yeah, I do think we need to address that. And I think one word is control. Companies, executives want control. And so I always go to that extreme, right? Like, okay, I want full control. I don't care about the talent side, but the productivity of what you just said, of 2.5 hours of your employees sitting in a car versus doing productive work and having clear outcomes and clear goals and moving the needle against those goals is a no-brainer, right? So obviously, you know, as HR professionals, we think about the talent side quite deeply. And when we're talking to our executive teams, putting in a way that makes sense to them is really important. And so that's why all this rhetoric about productivity going down in hybrid models is dangerous. It's actually quite harmful. And so even if we don't care about happiness or engagement, and we don't believe that more happier and more engaged employees are productive employees, which obviously I don't believe that, the productivity piece and the innovation piece, I'm calling BS on that. It's just not true. It could have been true in 1990 before we had access to the technology technology we have at our disposal, but it's not true anymore. It's simply not true. And all of these arguments about, you know, wanting people in front of me with the apprenticeship, all the things we talked about, yes, agreed, does not have to be 5 days a week.
So let me ask a question. You talked about how the hybrid model is the great equalizer. And I totally understand that from the diversity and belonging perspective, 100%. But what about in a retail organization, or what about in a hospital, or where services are provided in person?
Yeah.
Corporate employees who might have the opportunity to work hybrid, and then you've got frontline employees who are actually either serving, you know, patients or customers. How do you then use hybrid as a great equalizer when it feels very unequal?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that's why, you know, when you adopt hybrid working as a strategy, remember I said the second ring is a flexibility philosophy, right? So no, like our frontline workers cannot work from home. In some cases, actually, we pressure tested that, and we, like, so call centers, for example, before the pandemic, we never would have thought they could work from home. They actually can. But there are other roles that cannot work from home with the technology we have right now. Who knows how AI will develop, and you may have manufacturing roles that are suited from home. Who knows? So this is where I think we have to draw the difference between equality and equity. And just because some roles can be done remotely and in person and others can't, that doesn't mean we should drop flexibility altogether. And that's why I said, when you think about hybrid working as a strategy, you think about hybrid working as an element of work flexibility, which then ladders up to, you know, employee experience and culture and employee value proposition. And, you know, the outcomes are magic. So, you know, in an organization where you have, you know, frontline workers and corporate workers, which I was a part of that type of organization at American Express. And so there are great technologies that enable really easy, you know, shift management, right? And allowing people to, you know, be flexible about their shifts or their hours or their days that they go into the office. Wall Street Journal wrote a great article about Land O'Lakes recently as a manufacturing organization who does adopt flexibility as a philosophy. And, you know, it's doable. And also, like, if people want to be in a hybrid role, that's a great development opportunity for them to then, you know, work their way into a hybrid role that exists in their organization.
I mean, it brings me back to a really funny story when I worked as a support in HR for a retail organization, and I went over to the coffee machine one day and there weren't lids for the coffee. And one of the regional managers was standing behind me and I'm like, where are the lids? And his response to me was, do you think at the front line they have lids on their coffee?
Right. Right.
So, and obviously that was pre-pandemic, but to your point, you know, frontline jobs and head office jobs have different perks and different benefits.
Yeah.
Also a different career path. And so it doesn't have to be equal. It needs to be equitable. And I really enjoyed that philosophy, speaking about that and just understanding that just because it doesn't work, let's say for your caregivers to not be in person doesn't mean that the head office employees can't have better work-life balance. For example, being a nurse, that's a choice. It is an in-person service. It is a profession that requires for you to be in person. And at the end of the day, even nursing has different levels of management where eventually they could be promoted into roles where it could be more hybrid. So also thinking about it maybe from a career pathing perspective would be interesting.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, we're so deep on this hybrid working dilemma right now. Would we talk about this about any other aspect of the employee value proposition, right? Like, do we say everyone needs to be paid the same way? Everyone should have equal access to the corporate jet, as Brian Elliott said to me on my podcast. You know, like, we don't do that equalization for anything else along the employee value proposition. So why are we so hell-bent on solving this for our working models?
I think it comes down to not understanding the resistance or not wanting to admit that element of control that leaders just don't want to give up. So maybe this isn't a fair question to put you on the spot about this, but if you're an HR leader or another leader who wants your co-leaders to recognize why they're clinging to this strategy, even though it's not necessarily the right one, how do you begin to get them to acknowledge why they feel this way and work towards getting to them thinking about it more strategically and with more common sense, to be frank?
Yeah, I think it's a great question and it doesn't put me on the spot at all. I get it quite a bit. I always like to ask the question, what are you missing by not being in the office 5 days a week? Like, what's falling through the cracks by doing that, right? And really getting underneath what is really driving this desire to be fully in the office 5 days a week. And then bringing to bear some of this data that I mentioned, bringing to bear some of these benefits that I mentioned, and trying to bust some of the myths. So we wrote a white paper about this whole topic, and we go through some myths. So we've heard them all. We have 10 of them in our white paper. And so really just going through those myths and getting underneath what's really bothering them. I'll never forget, you know, when I was at American Express and we were going hybrid, I think, you know, in 2014, I think we went hybrid in Canada. And, you know, the leader I was working with said, well, can I have high performers go hybrid and not high performers required to be in the office? That was a very common question back then. And, you know, you get underneath that, and it comes down to people not wanting to have proper performance management conversations with their people, right?
Right.
And so I said, sure, let's just create a dunce corner over there in the corner and let's see how that goes, right? Just have everyone come to the office and you're in the you're in the not hybrid group and you sit there in the corner. So, you know, getting underneath the implications from an employee-centric perspective, I think really helps. Drawing out all of these, you know, these data points around, no, what you read in the headlines are not always the truth. A lot of the time it's clickbait and or it's the connection of two elements that are not necessarily cause and effect. You know, I loved the one that came out about like people don't get promoted as much if they're not in the office full time. There are a lot of steps that happen between those two things, right? Being remote and not getting promoted. There are a lot of steps in between there that are in an employee's control, in an employer's control, and things that employees have to pay attention to and have to own if they're choosing to be fully remote. This was a case of choosing to be fully remote when you're in a hybrid model. But I think we have to be careful because we live in a world, again, of a lot of clickbait and a lot of misinformation, and bringing it back to common sense, often helpful, but then getting into some of the data.
Going back to common sense, I mean, there are some people who absolutely want to work in the office and they prefer to be in the office. They like the social aspect of the office. They may even be prepared to do the travel to the office every day because of the benefits that they derive from it versus other people who might want the choice. And so I guess that goes back to the comments about the great equalizer and about using it as a strategy versus a policy. So let's be a little bit intentional about the next question then. And I know that we've referenced it a couple of times, but if I was to ask you, Naomi, what is the difference between hybrid as a policy versus hybrid as a strategy? How would you define the difference?
So again, going back to the outcomes. So the outcome of hybrid as a policy is literally policies that have come out are mostly look something like we require you to be in the office 3 days a week and home 2 days a week, or on average and over time, we expect you to be in the office, blah, and out of the office, blah. So that's just focused on kind of the policy aspect of it. And again, the outcome would be compliance or not, right? Like it's binary, either you're complying with that policy or you're not. Whereas when you treat it like a strategy, you're not just focused on how many days in or out of the office. And by the way, like a company like Nike, who thought that their crappy performance was going to be solved by getting their people to the office more days a week. This is where, you know, if you're treating it like a strategy, you're saying, okay, our performance is not where we want it to be. There are levers in the people box, in the process and policy box, and in the technology and infrastructure box that we can use in order to solve this problem. But they went quickly to, okay, let's get everybody back into the office and that's going to solve all our problems. 4 days a week, right? Like for 3 days a week to 4 days a week, it causes more angst versus anything else. So when you're looking at it as a strategy, you're really, there are a few different strategic approaches you can take. We offer two in the white paper. One is integrative thinking and one's design thinking to really get crystal clear on the problem you're trying to solve. And then employing and articulating tactics that enable you to achieve that outcome. And, you know, Roger Martin had a great quote that we also included in the white paper about strategy being a set of choices that are integrated. So it's not a bunch of random choices and a bunch of random initiatives, but rather if I increase my policy from 3 to 4, right? That's one of the levers, days in the office. What does that mean for my leadership development? What does that mean for the technology enablement? What does that mean from a space perspective, right? A lot of companies are going, okay, let's go 4 days in the office. And the situation that I articulated before happens. You get to the office, unless you get there at 7 a.m., there's nowhere to sit. You waste your your time looking for a seat. You run into five colleagues in the hall and you're complaining about how impossible it is to find a seat. You know, that's not my idea of productive.
Or as somebody whose team isn't all physically in the same location or in the same city, you spend your entire day in a meeting room.
Right, on Zoom calls.
So you've gone all the way to the office. You may have one or two employees or one or two colleagues sitting around you, but ultimately you find yourself hiding out so that you're not disrupting everyone else in the office.
Exactly.
But I would say, Naomi, I mean, I think back to before the pandemic and I was sitting in an open space environment on Zoom calls all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't think about it the same way. So I know we talked about it a little bit, but what has inherently changed?
We had a global remote working experiment during the pandemic, period. Habits changed. Habits are very hard to change, by the way. So habits changed. We all got into our comfy clothes and our, you know, I'm wearing my Zoom pants. I'm wearing my, you know, my Zoom top and Zoom pants. And we were very productive. And there was proof that we can be very productive fully remotely. That's the bottom line, right? So now there was this whole narrative around enticing people to come back to the office for what? And, you know, it's still very much an us versus them discussion. It's the executives versus the people, and not recognizing that the people are what run most of our businesses today. And, you know, again, I look at it from a talent lens because I'm an HR person, but even if you don't care about the talent lens, people are not as productive when they're required to be in the office on Zoom calls. We tested it out and it worked. By the way, I didn't even use Zoom before the pandemic. So there are some collaboration tools that we now take for granted that didn't exist before the pandemic.
Okay, so we're gonna do rapid fire. Okay, so first of all, as we get into rapid fire, what is the one thing you believe small businesses could do today to change the game for their people?
Care about them.
First job, Naomi.
Telemarketer at Weedman.
At Weedman?
Oh. Yeah. It's not what it sounds like. It's like a chemical grass company.
Lawn service.
Yeah, lawn service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Best
not
job.
A chemical grass company didn't sound any better. A lawn care company.
Lawn care company.
Yeah. With the yellow pages.
Like, got it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's hardcore. Okay. Good for you. How long did you stay in that one?
That was probably a quick quit.
Okay.
I'm an introvert. I was like, I would like pray for them not to answer the phone.
Which is a great quality in a telemarketer.
Yeah, exactly.
Best job.
Oh, best job. So my best not real job was I was a dancer at a DJ company. I was one of the first ones in Montreal, which was really fun. And it wasn't like sexy like it sounds. It was like I wore a tie and suspenders and I was really dorky and like invited kids on the dance floor to dance the Macarena. It was not sexy at all. And my best corporate job, I've loved all of my corporate jobs, quite honestly. I would say probably the best one was when I was head of HR at Amex Canada. That was a really fun job.
Awesome.
Nice. I'm really glad you clarified on the dancing part. Just
it's turned into a thing, but like back then right. It was really dorky.
Yeah. I once taught line dancing.
Like that. Like I was teaching line dancing. Yeah. I taught the electric slide in Macarena to 13-year-old boys.
Biggest mess up at work.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. But I'll give a funny one. When I first joined Deloitte, I didn't know how to use the printer. And so my boss was very hardcore and he made me cry and I couldn't figure out how to use the printer.
And quickest quit.
Quickest quit was probably Weedman because I was clearly not a fit for Weedman. And they clearly did not do their due diligence on the types of characteristics they wanted in their telemarketers. It was back in the day of ticking and tying work papers with colored pencils, not shortly before that. And so we sat there with a phone book and highlighters and dialed phones and heard busy signals. And some of your listeners probably don't know what any of those things mean.
Isn't that so funny? And were you on straight commission or were they paying you hourly without vetting?
They paid me hourly. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we weren't selling anything. I think we were doing free assessments.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not too bad, but you still hope they didn't answer.
I still hope they didn't answer. The best was when I could leave a message because then I was like, check. I got in touch with them, but I didn't have to speak to anyone.
That's so winning.
Naomi Tunnelman, not your next BDR. Just... Well, thanks so much, Naomi, for taking the time to come chat with us.
Thank you for having me.
How can everyone get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. So Naomi Teitelman Kola on LinkedIn. We also have our Future Forward profile up on LinkedIn, and our website is futureforward.com, FutureForward.com.
And who is it that you would suggest get in touch with you for some of the services available on Future Forward?
Oh, thank you for asking. So anybody in HR, anybody looking to make work better, we have a newsletter, we have a podcast, we have a community, and I do some advisory services as well. So anybody looking to make work better in a talent in the talent realm, feel free to reach out to me and connect, or just reach out to me and connect and say hello.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you loved this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.